Dr. Paul here with another episode of Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. It is my privilege to welcome back Luke Yamaguchi. You were with us once before. Your ability with science just amazes me. You've got this background in functional nutrition, gut restoration, and honestly, I think you're a fine scientist. And so thank you for coming back on the show.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
My pleasure. My understanding is you wrote an amazing article. Well, it's not my understanding. I read it. And you're covering this issue of people who've had COVID disease being at higher risk for injury from COVID vaccines. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could explain a little bit about that point of view.
Yeah. So on a recent episode of your show, you had Dr. Hooman Norchash on as a guest, and he talked about that, right? The potential dangers of giving a COVID vaccine to people who've previously had COVID-19. So just to remind the audience, I'm sure they all remember, but Dr. Norchash, he's a medical doctor. He has a PhD in cellular immunology, and he was basing this warning on an immunological prognostication, meaning that based on his understanding of immunology, individuals with a history of COVID-19, they could be putting themselves at greater risk. So to understand the proposed biological mechanism of action for why this may be the case, we just need to know a few things. So first, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which causes COVID-19, it can infect endothelial cells through the ACE2 receptor. So the endothelial cells are cells that line, they make up the lining of the digestive tract, the intestinal tract. They also line the inner surface of our blood vessels. And people who have recently had COVID-19, they can have these viral antigens, or maybe you could think of it as like little remnants of the virus in the endothelial lining of their blood vessels, among other tissues. And if these viral antigens are present, the immune response triggered by COVID vaccination will target these tissues, causing inflammation and damage. So in blood vessels, this can actually result in blood clots with potential for major complications like heart attack and stroke. So that's the theory, as I understand it, is put forth by Dr. Norchash. But then the question comes, you know, is there any evidence to support this hypothesis? And Dr. Norchash, he provided some anecdotal evidence. He told the story of a 36-year-old healthy orthopedic surgeon in Tennessee who had asymptomatic COVID-19, meaning his symptoms were so mild or even non-existent that he never even knew that he had COVID until he tested positive for COVID antibodies later on. But by then, he already had received the COVID vaccine and ended up dying, actually, shortly thereafter. So if you read the news report, he died of a, quote, COVID-related illness known as multi-system inflammatory syndrome that causes inflammation in the blood vessels and other tissues, which sounds a lot like what Dr. Norchash was trying to warn about when he said we shouldn't be vaccinating people with COVID vaccines who've already had COVID-19 because it could be dangerous. So that's one anecdotal story. There's another one I wanted to mention that also made the news as well. A California resident who had tested positive for COVID-19 in December of last year actually ended up dying just hours after receiving his COVID vaccine on January 21st of this year.
Wow. These are horrifying stories. You know, we're not saying here that the COVID vaccine is without merit. It's a very effective vaccine, according to Dr. Norchasm. But what he was trying to emphasize is that if we can test individuals prior to getting the vaccine, his program Tests Before Vaccines, then we can avoid triggering this much higher rate of devastating potential side effects, including death, as you reported, by knowing if you've had the illness by prior testing, then you avoid vaccination. You probably don't need vaccination. You probably have already developed an immune response from having had the natural infection. And this coming from a top immunologist who's mainstream, who vaccinates, who really likes vaccines, thinks vaccines are an important part of our tool chest. This is an important warning. So do you have, Luke, examples of sort of what we're finding? Is there other evidence of this sort of harm?
Yeah, and so it actually turns out that there's some data that would support this hypothesis as well. And this comes from an article published in The Telegraph. So recent data shows that the COVID vaccine side effects are seen up to 3 times more often in people who've previously had COVID-19. And this is data. And this data comes from the King's College Zoe app, which has logged details from more than 700,000 vaccinations. So now we're totally on the opposite end of anecdotal evidence. This is just data now. The data showed that 12% of people reported side effects after their first dose of the Pfizer vaccine, but that number jumped to 36% in people who'd previously had COVID-19, so three times more common side effects in that group. For the AstraZeneca vaccine, 32% of people reported symptoms following their shot, but that actually rose to 53% for people who had previously been infected with COVID. So the data very clearly shows that people who've previously had COVID-19 appear to be at substantially greater risk of vaccine side effects if they go on to get a COVID vaccination.
And are we able to find reports of this sort of reaction in maybe the VAERS database?
Yes, absolutely. So I looked through the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System database, also known as VAERS, and found many reports where individuals had gotten COVID-19 and survived only to then die soon after receiving their COVID vaccination. So, you know, many people may say like, well, all these deaths, they're just coincidence. And that, you know, these people would have died even if they hadn't received the COVID vaccine. To be fair, these individuals who I'll mention in a moment who died, they were elderly. Oftentimes they did have multiple comorbidities. So in other words, they tended to have a lot of health issues. But what I want to point out is that despite them being elderly and despite having multiple comorbidities, you know, these people got COVID-19 and they survived, right? They got COVID-19 and they survived, but then they were given a COVID vaccine and they died shortly thereafter. So if I can, I just want to share maybe like a handful of their stories because—
Please, please do.
I think they're stories that are worth being told. So VAERS ID 940955 was a 66-year-old woman living in New York who had previously been diagnosed with COVID-19. And she was found without a pulse and breathless 20 minutes after receiving her COVID vaccination. She died on January 11th, 2021, the same day she got her vaccine. And, you know, some people will say, well, you can't prove that it was the vaccine that caused her death. It could have just been a coincidence. For example, Paul, there's a ABC News quote fact-checked article, and the headline reads, "No link between COVID-19 vaccines and those who die after receiving them. The CDC hasn't identified any cases in which a vaccine caused a person's death." So I guess we're somehow supposed to believe that this 66-year-old woman who stopped breathing and no longer had a pulse 20 minutes after getting her COVID vaccination, that I guess it was all just a coincidence. But I'll...
There's, folks, this part of the vaccine story in our country just drives me nuts. As a doctor, if I give you a prescription for penicillin or amoxicillin and you take that and you develop hives within hours or even the next day or even 10 days into the course, we know without question that that is an allergic reaction until proven otherwise. Obviously, you can't prove it, but it's such a temporal link. This happens first, then this happens. Now, as you already pointed out, Luke, we now understand the mechanism by which this can happen. So it's no longer just association doesn't mean causation, which is the usual statement that's made whenever we see these, quote, coincidences. No, we have temporal association. We have biological plausibility, meaning we know how and why it's happening. And now it's not just one coincidence or two coincidences. You've found several that are reported to VAERS, and we know VAERS is missing most of them.
Yeah, I'm only going to share like a small handful. Maybe I'll share just maybe like five more, but I found actually about 80 reports in VAERS, maybe more than 80 reports in VAERS of people who'd previously gotten COVID-19. They survived, and then they got the vaccine, and then they died soon thereafter. So, you know, we don't have time to go through all these. There's too many. People can go to my website and read the article and look at all of them, read them for themselves and come to their own conclusion. And since we just have limited time, maybe I'll just share like a handful more of these cases, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
So VAERS ID 915682 was an 85-year-old woman living in Kentucky. She had a history of COVID on November 17th and went on to receive a COVID vaccine on December 30th at 5 p.m. At 6:45 p.m., she was found unresponsive and went into cardiac arrest. She was then transported to the hospital where she expired at 8 p.m. So this woman received the COVID vaccine at 5 p.m. and died 3 hours later that same day. VAERS ID 967830 was a 64-year-old man living in California. He had previously had COVID on December the 24th. He went on to receive his COVID vaccine on January the 21st. After he got the shot, he was transported by ambulance to the emergency department where he required intubation and struggled with hypoxia, low oxygen. After 95 minutes, he was pronounced dead at 6:20 p.m. on the same day he received his COVID vaccination, January 21st, 2021. Bears ID 1082717 was an 88-year-old woman living in Arizona. She had a history of COVID on January the 16th and went on to receive a COVID vaccination 1 month later. The write-up reads, I'm going to quote this one. The write-up says, quote, patient dropped dead 24 hours after receiving the vaccine. The vaccine killed her. She received the vaccine February 16th and died February 17th, 2021, end quote. So those are straight verbatim from the Bears report. And maybe this will, I'll just read two more if I can.
Sure.
Bears ID 1106667 was a 67-year-old man living in California. He had a history of COVID on June 3rd, 2020, and went out to receive a COVID vaccine on March 12th, 2021. The following morning, he seemed not himself, but sat down and ate breakfast around 9 a.m. On getting up from the table, he got suddenly weak, his head rolled back, and his eyes rolled up. 911 was called, and he was given resuscitation efforts, which were unsuccessful. He was pronounced dead at 11 a.m., one day after receiving the COVID vaccination on March 13th, 2021. And this will be the last one. Bears ID 1003382 was an 83-year-old woman living in Alabama. She had a history of COVID on January the 4th and went on to receive a COVID vaccine on February the 2nd. The write-up states, and I'll quote this one verbatim as well, began with vomiting and diarrhea, complains of chest pain, bradycardia, which is low pulse, hypotension, which is low blood pressure, two seizures in 45 minutes after not having one in years. We gave fluids, gave Zofran, comfort measures. Patient passed away at midnight, was completely fine one day before. Had minimal issues with COVID, though did have a pneumonia that was treated with an antibiotic early on and resolved, end quote. So the great irony, Dr. Paul, is that these elderly people who got COVID-19 and survived, like they got it and they survived, you know, despite being elderly and frail, only to then go on to die after getting a COVID vaccine that, you know, as you said, they most likely didn't even need, because they already had natural immunity. But because they had previously had COVID, they were at greater risk then of adverse events from the COVID vaccine. And as I said, there's many, many more cases like this in bears. I wrote a blog post on my website, darksidevaccines.com, that compiles maybe 80 or so reports, just like similar to the ones I read. And so I encourage people to check that out. Feel free to share that article with friends and family who've already had COVID. Share it with other people too. Share it with journalists and legislators, and please help get the word out, because I think we may inadvertently be harming people with our one-size-fits-all approach to vaccination here. And that concerns me.
Very well put. We know that when we give vaccines, we don't give vaccines to someone who is acutely ill, right? So in all these examples you gave, these were people who'd been ill in the past, actually with COVID disease, and were well at the time of being vaccinated. So regardless if they had some underlying conditions, it's pretty clear that they died as a direct consequence of that vaccine. And you've outlined the, you know, endothelial mechanisms where you just get this you know, massive inflammatory response in your blood vessels, around the heart. It can be around the brain. Yeah, it's well documented now. It's time, folks, at the very least, if you're going to get this vaccine, and I know we're already halfway into rolling this out for the entire world, but this is why it's so urgent that you pay attention to this issue. Insist on being thoroughly tested for prior COVID disease. I would get an antibody test and the acute test. So do both. So the nose swabs are usually those antigen tests. They're seeing if you're currently infected. And the blood test is usually for your antibodies to see whether your body mounted an immune response. The other thing to note, though, is with COVID, the immune system responds a little differently for a lot of people, and you may not mount a large antibody response. So it's more of a humoral arm of the immune system, the T cells. And this is perhaps particularly true in children. So I might even add to this test before vaccine approach that you're proposing is a really good idea, and I agree. But I might even add, if you've had fairly classic symptoms of COVID, you probably don't need that vaccine anyway. You know, play it safe, use the precautionary principle where you first do no harm. And while we sort of figure this all out, there's a lot to learn still.
Yeah. And I think they recently just came out with a T cell antibody test. So you can actually look for T cells as well. So that if it's not on the market already, it's soon to be on the market. So that may be an option as well, in addition to the conventional antibody testing for people.
Yeah. I would get that for sure if it becomes commercially available, because that will be the other important piece of this. You know, if you're already immune, there appears to be much higher risk. We knew this from animal studies, actually, that were done, you know, a decade ago with SARS and MERS, that prior infection puts people at higher risk of death from vaccination. So, you know, pay attention to this, folks. It could literally save your life. And thank you, Luke, for bringing this information to us. And again, remind us, where can people go to read your article and to get your information?
They can go to my website, darksidevaccines.com, and my most recent article that contains this compilation of reports from VAERS, I believe it's titled COVID Vaccines Can Be Deadly for Some. So they can check out that article.
Wonderful. Well, it was a pleasure having you back on the show, and I look forward to doing this again sometime in the near future.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
Thanks, Luke. Hi folks, Dr. Paul here from Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. You need to know about the members only area. So this is a way you can support the show, because this show is not having any sponsorship whatsoever. We are beholden to no one. And the reason we can bring you information that you really aren't getting anywhere else is because it's supported by you, the viewers. What you get, however, in this membership section, for the first month, it's absolutely free. And after that, for a good cup of coffee for $4.95, here's what you get. I've written two amazing ebooks. We will have Q&As live with me. We have transcripts of every episode. We have full episodes and other well-edited episodes that are not in the main show. So you get exclusive content, and I will also be posting exclusive videos sort of from the cuff. When I have a thought that I just feel like I want the world to know about, or if I read an article that it's like, wow, this is important, people need to know about it, all of this will go in the members only section. So join the team of Against the Wind, be a part of the solution our world needs, and sign up as a member and support our work. Welcome, Dr. Hooman Norchasm. It is a real privilege and honor to have you on this show. I simply know you as an MD, PhD immunologist in Philadelphia, but maybe you could enlighten the audience on your background in medicine and your credentials.
So my area of scientific expertise is cellular immunology. So I've spent a lot of time over the course of my career thinking about how antibodies are generated, how T cells function, and you know, how protective immunity is generated.
So I'm a pediatrician, and it feels like children are just not getting COVID in any significant way.
And such a blessing. I mean, think about it, right? If you go back to the flu pandemic of 1918, right, kids were affected by it.
But you don't think it has anything necessarily to do with the different arms of the immune system? I mean, do kids have a more robust natural immune system?
Or what from an adaptive immune immunity perspective, that's certainly true. For example, if you take a chest X-ray of a neonate, you know, half their chest is filled with the thymus, which is where T cells are coming from, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just from the perspective of how robust a child's immune system is. I think that's probably a fair assessment. Whether it's causal to why SARS-CoV-2 is sparing kids, I don't know. I think the jury's still out on that.
Now, you've written about a screen before vaccines approach, and it was, I think you've made it clear to me that there's something unique going on, some potential danger, shall we say, to those who've already had COVID-19 disease illness. Can you explain that to the audience, what your concerns are and what your proposed approach to address those concerns would be?
I think it would be an understatement for us not to accept that we're doing something really unprecedented in this vaccine campaign. The one issue that's fundamentally different about this, and really I think has been unprecedented in the history of vaccine science, in the Western Hemisphere at least, is that we're literally deploying this large-scale vaccine campaign in the midst of an outbreak, where literally millions of people have had recent natural infections. So literally you have individuals who are walking around and their tissues have been bathed in viral antigens, if you will. So literally when the virus infects you naturally, every one of your tissues is getting infected. There's cells in all of your tissues that are infected. And these antigens from these viruses, even after you recover, linger. So now along comes the vaccine man and injects a vaccine into a person who's had a recent infection. That immune response that the vaccine forces to be activated now can extend itself to all these tissues where the antigen is located. So this is really a fundamental problem, I think. And I think it's been underestimated by all the vaccine manufacturers and the FDA. I think we're doing something potentially really unsafe here. But my concern mostly is when you introduce the vaccine into a person who has had a prior natural infection, which really affects all tissues, right? So if you've had COVID, if you've had a COVID infection, you are essentially open field for the virus to replicate in all your tissues. So, you get this vaccine and the immune response gets reactivated. Well, it gets reactivated and goes to the places where the antigen was before.
Right.
So you could have exacerbation of myocarditis. You could have cardiac complications. You could have thromboembolic events like strokes and heart attacks. You could have seizures even, from this. So,
yeah, so this is a huge concern, folks. We're basically talking your heart, your blood vessels, blood clots, brain, the lining of your brain can get inflamed and you end up with seizures. These are all real things that we're also seeing this is happening, right? It's in the post-surveillance data.
I think we're seeing a lot of these complications. Unfortunately, the way our system is set up is that both the press and our public health officials seem to have a tendency to say all of these things are unrelated. It seems like vaccines are the greatest cause of coincidences these days.
That's been my experience.
Look, I'm as far as you can get from being an anti-vaxxer. My kids have all been vaccinated. I got the COVID-19 vaccine myself. My parents got it, right?
Yeah.
I have a PhD in immunology. I know exactly what vaccines could do for epidemics, right? But the fact is that you have an establishment narrative that tries to put people in these boxes, right? And it's completely irrational. It's an echo chamber. It's an echo chamber where people are not willing to consider that there may be folks who are at high risk from any medical practice.
Right.
And really, I think it's driven by industry, Paul, and it's driven by the fact that this particular industry has a lot of legal protections. Look, it doesn't really matter if 1 in 10,000 Americans are susceptible to this complication that I'm talking about here, right? The ones who are infected with the natural virus. It's not the frequency that matters. It's the fact that it's avoidable. And how do we avoid it? It's avoidable. The issue is, are there a subset of people who are identifiable and who you can prevent the harm in? And I think the answer is yes. These are people who are naturally infected. I think we should exclude naturally infected people from the vaccination process because they will represent a very significant minority subset of people who are in harm's way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole screen before vaccine campaign.
Thank you so much, Hooman. That nails it. I love your analogies. I wish you and your family the very best. And hopefully I can have you on again in the future.
It would be my privilege. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome to our studio session. I have with me in the studio one of my families from Integrative Pediatrics. We've got Carol Ann, Mom. We've got Jacob. We've seen quite a bit of each other. Aiden and Maya. So in this segment, we're just going to highlight sort of your journey with regards to any challenges that might have potentially been related to vaccines.
Well, Jacob came out, I guess, fairly normal. We got all of his shots on time. And, when you're a new parent, I think that sometimes having those appointments to go check in with the doctor and tell you that everything is okay is reassuring.
Sure.
Right? At a certain point, he had gotten really sick that year. He had gotten like RSV. And I had been to the pediatrician several times. Mm-hmm. And I think he had around antibiotics. He had some inhalers. And then he got pneumonia. And then we went into the preschool years. And when I got him into the classroom, I realized that what people had been saying, that he was hyper and that he probably has ADHD, could be more true than I thought. And then they did diagnose him with ADHD.
Yeah. So Jacob, don't worry about that. I don't like labels, and we know each other, and we're not label people. Like, I'm pretty hyper. People who know me will go, oh yeah, he's probably got ADHD himself. But I don't go through life with a big old sign on my forehead, ADHD. So why are we seeing this change with generations? I think it has to do with we're living in a much more toxic world, right? It's not your fault. It's not your mom's fault. One of the toxins, though, that we don't usually think about is what's in vaccines, because it's a direct injection, so you're bypassing the normal defensive mechanism. You know, I don't want you to feel bad that we're talking about that. It's just a label. Interestingly enough, though, my data from my study just recently published showed no ADHD in the unvaccinated children. What? So out of curiosity, you've got a couple other kids here with you. We got Aiden. How's her journey been with regards to any sort of vaccine issues or focus issues?
So she would have weird allergies.
Okay.
And things that just weren't like normal.
She had asthma too?
And asthma, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, one of the things we found in our research, the unvaccinated rarely get allergies or asthma. And it's much more common in the vaccinated.
I never really noticed with her until I learned what I know now, and then looking back, and then having these asthma attacks out of nowhere in a kid who seemed 100% normal.
Yeah.
Just now I'm like, oh, well, that was right after her kindergarten shots.
So what was your experience with Maya?
Unvaccinated, 100%, four and a half years old.
Okay. And how has she done health-wise?
She's the healthiest person in our family.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This story that you're sharing is the reason I'm having you on the show today. Folks, I wanted you to just sort of hear that because it's real. This is one example, but I have hundreds in my practice. Thank you so much, all of you, for coming on this show. Well, welcome to an amazing guest I have today, Josh Getzko, who is an associate professor of sociology and criminology at the Hebrew University in Israel.
You know, all around the world, Israel is being held up as kind of an example of, you know, the first country to kind of get a very high vaccination rate against COVID.
Okay.
What people might not be aware of is how it was that Israel was able to get there. Or the government signed an agreement with Pfizer where we would basically trade our health data to get first in line for the vaccine. So this was a trade with Pfizer. Now, the details of this agreement are not fully known. The agreement was partially released, was heavily redacted, and all of the secret parts of the agreement are going to be kept secret for 30 years. Our medical system and government oversight bodies are riddled with conflicts of interest, just like in the U.S. Eight of the authors of this New England Journal of Medicine article on the effects of the vaccination campaign in Israel on COVID, eight of them have received money from Pfizer in one way or another. And one of the key medical experts promoting the vaccination campaign, who said that Pfizer should do their clinical trial on children in Israel, has also received lots of money from Pfizer for speaking and consulting fees. So what is the green pass system? Basically, to get a green pass, you have to fulfill one of the following requirements. Either you've gotten your second shot of one of these RNA vaccines, either Pfizer or Moderna. Those are the only vaccines right now in Israel, pretty much. Or you have to have recovered from COVID, or you have to have a medical exemption, and it's not at all clear who they're giving these medical exemptions to and where to get them. People don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to present a negative COVID test from the last 72 hours. Without a green pass, okay, you are not allowed to sit indoors at restaurants or cafes.
No way. That's active right now?
That's active right now. Like if Holy. I want to go to sit at a restaurant or inside a cafe, they're going to check if it's indoors. They're going to check my green pass. But the problem is that there's a big segment of the population that doesn't have a green pass. So these businesses are still hurting.
With the history of the people of Israel and the Holocaust and everything that happened in our past, it just seems to be shocking that this is happening to you all.
It is shocking. I think a lot of people aren't aware of this, but one of the biggest components of Nazi propaganda against Jews in World War II was that they were diseased. Same type of propaganda being turned against the unvaccinated, right? The number of deaths that have been reported due to COVID injuries in the first 2 months is far more than the deaths reported for many other vaccines in a much longer, over a much longer period of time, just to give one example. And it's just being completely ignored. There's just such a long history of criminality among pharmaceutical companies.
So you're saying we shouldn't trust them?
Should we trust them? No, we shouldn't. It came out that people at Johnson & Johnson knew for decades, since at least the early 1970s, that their talcum powder for babies was contaminated with asbestos. Company executives knew about this. Mine managers, scientists, doctors, and lawyers knew about this problem. They actively hid it from regulators, right? They allowed babies and mothers to be poisoned by asbestos. Hmm. Who does that? Who does that? I'll tell you who. Psychopaths do that. We create this legal fiction. We allow people to hide behind it, to duck criminal responsibility.
What would your parting tips be for our audience as far as what they should be thinking about?
And in general, I think governments around the world try to influence people's behavior, try to control people through fear and hatred towards one another.
Yeah.
And so my parting advice would be whenever somebody in the media or the government or wherever is trying to either make you feel afraid or make you feel hatred or anger at other people, just ignore it.
Well, welcome, folks, to our segment of In the News. Welcome, Bernadette Pager. You are the Public Policy Director of Informed Choice Washington and the host of An Informed Life Radio. I understand you have a video that you want to share with us that comes from the CDC.
Yesterday, we in the United States surpassed 30 million cases of COVID-19. Now is one of those times when I have to share the truth and I have to hope and trust you will listen. I'm going to lose the script. And I'm going to reflect on the recurring feeling I have of impending doom. We have come such a long way. Three historic scientific breakthrough vaccines, and we are rolling them out so very fast. And so I'm asking you to just hold on a little longer, to get vaccinated when you can.
That was the phoniest thing I have ever seen. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to push back with you here. Let's have a discussion.
Let's have a discussion. Her intention, however, was to create fear.
Create fear. And since when do we have people in positions of authority that we look to for guidance intentionally put fear in us and say doom? That was a sales pitch for three dangerous
vaccines.
Products.
I think it's so important, folks, that you basically turn off the news because you're not getting actual valuable information. You're getting fear-mongering. I understand you have some information about deaths and illness in your state of Washington in folks who are fully vaccinated.
Yes. So at least that we know of, 102 people who are fully vaccinated had two doses of one of the two-dose vaccines, and it's been at least 2 weeks post that second dose, have been diagnosed with COVID-19. Eight of them have been hospitalized, and two have died. This happens with all vaccines. That's what their press release says. As of March 19th, 44,606 adverse events reported to this passive system, 4,450 hospitalizations, 7,485 visits to urgent care, 6,759 visits to their own doctor's office, 2,050 deaths reported, 76 miscarriages, but they're now just now pushing it onto pregnant women, which is terrifying. You know, it just goes on and on. And we're beginning to have now independent researchers write and publish about the mechanisms of injury that explain how these adverse reactions and deaths are being caused from these products.
Yeah. I think the tragic thing here is this is an experimental vaccine. It was rushed to market. And sadly, they're already stopping any kind of long-term surveillance. So we just have this passive surveillance system that we know is woefully inadequate. I think you have a report about a passport here in the USA.
Oh, yeah. So they've already rolled one out in New York. They got everybody used to, you can't do this, 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 or this unless you're wearing your mask. And now it's going to be substituted without showing your vaccine pass. So it's rolling out in New York City. There was an article in the Seattle Times today that just said it's inevitable.
Wow. This reminds me, I grew up in Southern Africa. I was in Rhodesia, went to high school in Swaziland. And during the time of apartheid and even in Rhodesia, the African population had to carry papers to move about. This is how they kept people in what they would call townships. Basically, you could not even go to certain parts of the country, the cities, of course, stores and venues without your papers. And this feels so much like that.
Right.
It is total control of the population. Coercion, I mean, informed consent, which is what we are all about on this show, goes out the window when you start requiring something like a passport to prove vaccination. Mm-hmm. Then you can do something. This is just right. Horrendous, horrifying.
It's disguised as public health. I highly recommend viewers to go to jeremyrhammond.com. Read in depth about this beautiful man, Dr. Paul, what he stands for, and how he's a leader in what we all need to do, and share the heck out of that.
There is something going on here with vaccine injury, and this is what parents have been telling us all along, and doctors particularly, but even most people just won't believe it because we're so indoctrinated and overwhelmed yeah. with the vaccines are safe narrative.
They've been chipping away at our freedom about the truth and ignoring the harm until we've been backed into a corner. And yet our movement has been growing anyway. Medical freedom and the truth and the corporate capture of public health, that CDC's phony tears and fake pitch to sell investigational products that are liability free is, you know, that's going to wake people up. All of this is, but we have to stay strong, Dr. Paul.
We all take a journey of awakening to what is really going on. And you have to sort of dig deep into your soul, into your spirit, into your intuition, call it a gut feeling, whatever it is. Parents, you have it. Everybody has it. Mm-hmm. And when things just aren't kind of making sense, I'd call that a clue. Pay attention to that. Do you have any closing thoughts, Bernadette, that you'd like to share with our audience?
Yes, I do. I want to leave people with two action things they can do, and you can provide the links there. So standforhealthfreedom.com, standforhealthfreedom.com has got a great action campaign going to get some congressional investigation going against the CDC and how they're behaving all along the way.
Thank you for that. You know, we are the control group. We shared on a previous show the data from the control group, which was the unvaccinated individuals in our country and how incredibly healthy they were in comparison to those who are vaccinated. The control group will be eliminated if we roll up our sleeves without consideration for any sort of long-term data and get this COVID vaccine. I'm not against vaccines. I'm not against the COVID vaccines per se, but at this point in time, we don't have enough data to say that it's safe. In fact, we have enough data to really raise our eyebrows and go, this does not feel like a safe vaccine. This feels like a mistake. And the interests that are pushing it forward, well, you know, there's billions and billions of dollars invested. Too big to fail is what you might say, right? But no, you yourself, you're the only person that can protect yourself yes. from making a decision that you cannot undo. The unfortunate thing about messenger RNA technology, but vaccines in general, is once in your body, you can't take it out. Doctors who take care of patients know that treating autoimmune conditions is extremely difficult because it's your own immune system that's attacking your body. So generally what doctors do is they prescribe a potent immunosuppressant. The number one moneymaker in the world, certainly in the United States, are immunosuppressants. Once your immune system is suppressed, you're at risk for cancer and infections. takes you to the number two moneymaker, the cancer drugs. And then what started it all to begin with, in large part, other than big toxins and big agriculture, it's the vaccines. So it's a vicious cycle creating illness and wreckage across the landscape that keeps us beholden to the almighty pharma. And I'm not anti-science. I'm not anti-pharma for that matter. Just do good science. So thank you for your attention, and we'll see you next week. I'm Dr. Paul.
Thanks for watching. I pledge to you to bring to you honest and vital content that's going to help you first do no harm to yourself or to your children. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. This is going to be a show every other week, and as soon as we get adequate funding, we're going to bring this to you weekly. We stand together for medical freedom and informed consent. Only you should decide what's injected into your body. So I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com. Sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.